Hi, Emily. Welcome to Green Left Radio.
Good morning, Sue. Thanks for having me.
Great. I'm glad you're online. So you're online with myself and Jacob Andrewrafa, the co-presenter. So we'll both share the questions for you, and we'll dive straight in because we don't have long left on the program. So firstly, I wanted to ask you about Emily Sims is from Prosper Australia, which is a research institute which does a lot of research around land, land rent, land banking, vacant dwelling rates and other such things. So my first question for Emily is that many of the politicians and the major parties, developers, the media, repeat constantly the mantra that the high cost of housing, whether you're renting or buying, is a result of lack of housing supply. I'm wondering if you could comment about this argument. Is the question of housing supply or housing distribution the cause of the high cost of housing?
Oh, thanks for the question, Sue. Yeah, it's a really important one because, you know, we're here that remain the business of dwellings. So this is demand and policy intervention that gets tested as governments need to...
Hey, Emily, sorry to interrupt you. It seems like you're getting some quite poor reception, so you're sort of cutting in and out. Is there like a part?
Oh, dear.
Can you move to a place where you are right now to get better reception, to give a bit of a test?
Is that better?
Yeah, I'm continuing.
Yeah. I think that might be a bit better. People might not have heard the first part of what you said because you're cutting in and out.
Oh, I apologise. Yeah, I live in rural New South Wales and I rely on satellite internet for my telephone access.
Well, that's so much better now. That's much better now.
Well, we heard all that. Elon. So you can continue. So it's definitely gone a lot better.
Thank you. Okay, well, yeah, I mean, the supply question is very important because we're told that we call it the planning constraint thesis, and it essentially contends that when prices remain high because the supply of dwellings in accessible and desirable locations hasn't kept pace with demand, and this is because there are restrictions on the amount of housing or the density at which new housing can be built that... it's due to planning zones and other kinds of planning restrictions like heritage controls or development density limits, and that the policy intervention that we need is to rezone or remove those kinds of planning regulations so that if we did this, then the market could then supply new dwellings at a rate that would bring down or at least restrict growth. And I think it's really important when we're talking about prices of housing to be really clear that housing is quite unique in that when we talk prices, like what is worth to buy and own, we're talking not just about housing as a consumption good, you know, what you would pay to live somewhere, but we're also talking about its attribute as a wealth generating or say vehicle asset, and house prices relate to asset pricing dynamics. So for example, if the interest rates go down or up, this has an influence on house prices. So when we're talking about prices and we're doing an analysis of housing costs and we want to talk about affordability, we tend to focus on the rents in the private market. Because that is a much better metric or measure of whether or not there is enough housing and whether or not people can access housing in an affordable way.
Well, one of the other things, Emily, is I know that Prosper did a piece of work where you studied the great COVID experiment, where the population went down in Australia because of COVID, but the construction companies were still producing dwellings or building dwellings at quite a rapid rate. And I understand the rents went down a bit, around 10% for a period of time, but really they didn't stay down. Do you want to sort of comment about that research?
Yeah, thanks, Sue. We did do a cheeky bit of research during the pandemic. Well, not during, but after. So we've released this report called Melbourne's Pandemic Rental Dynamics, an unnatural experiment in housing supply. So our contention here is that if we think about the population shock that Melbourne experienced in 2021 and 2022, when we lost, 80,000 net population in 2021, if we think about that in terms of like a massive building boom, imagine if all things were held equal and we just dropped in another 100,000 dwellings, what would that do to prices? So with this kind of cheeky little setup, we had a look at what happened to rents. And I think it's important to understand before the pandemic what kind of rental and supply dynamics existed in Melbourne. So Melbourne is one of the fastest growing cities in the developed world. We were growing on average 10,000 additional residents per year. So this is like one of the highest rates of growth in the OECD. And what's quite astounding is that despite the fact that we were adding so many new people per year, construction in Melbourne pretty much kept up. So we found that in the 3 years before the pandemic, Melbourne actually added one new house for every two new residents. And we built more than enough in the decade prior to maintain the household formation rates at about 2.6 people per dwelling. And the other thing that's really interesting about that is that how finely tuned an equilibrium demand and supply actually held. So, for example, we'd get a bit more excess population and the rents would go up a little bit, and then construction would kick up, and basically by the time that we're at the beginning of the pandemic in 2019, rent growth was flat, and the equilibrium between new population and the cumulative rate of construction, they were really, really close together. So then we have this population shock, and it's actually the first time that Melbourne has lost population since the Great Depression. We saw 80,000 people sort of net population outflows, and at the same time, construction wasn't really locked down. So the construction industry really did continue to pump out houses at the very high rate that it already had been. So combined with the population outflow and the ongoing construction, we were able to say that there was about a 5%, 6% imbalance between supply and demand. So essentially there was enough empty, when we talk about excess supply, we're not talking about empty houses. We're just sort of talking about how much extra space there potentially was. And we calculated that to be about enough to house 260,000 people. So that's a huge shock on the demand side. So the impact of all of this was, we've called it a virtual building boom, was that average rents went down about 12%, but they didn't stay down. They were in fact growing again within 12 months. So 12 months, rents were back to pre-pandemic levels, despite the fact that we built more houses and there were still less people. And the real question is, well, why? And I think it's difficult to answer those questions on the basis of our data, but we did have a bit of a wander in the speculative kind of weeds. So one thing, the most important thing to understand is that, you know, people aren't static. Markets adapt. We adapt. There is this first order, first round shock, you know, the demand shock. And then there is the second round, third round responses. And what we kind of talk about are some, or sort of three major things. So firstly, there's this idea there was a preference shift. You know, people wanted to live in more housing. You know, they wanted to consume more space because of the way that we were locked in and the changes to our work life. You know, we were all living at home, and I know that, you know, living in a share house with five other people when you weren't allowed to leave was a pretty gnarly experience for many people. So that preference shift towards larger, more space, more private space. And then the other thing, though, is that there, as prices fall down, as rents come down, well, then you can afford to consume more. So induced consumption or induced demand due to the falling cost of homes is another adaptive response that is in the mix. And one of the other adaptive responses that we saw was an increase in vacancies. So speculative vacancies is a report that Prospera has put out for 10 years. And what we saw during the pandemic is that 35,000 more dwellings than usual were left. So that's like a 50% increase on what we'd seen in 2019 in terms of our dwellings that are left vacant over a 12-month period as measured by their water usage. So those three kind of like main adaptive responses, withholding of stock by landlords or, you know, vacancies, people changing their preferences and wanting more space, and then the price falls actually inducing us to be able to afford more space, really gobbled up all of that excess supply rapidly, more than 12 months. So the big point that we were trying to make, or what we kind of came to with this report, is that when it comes to these conversations about the supply and what supply can do for housing affordability, if the price impact of, you know, the equivalent of 2 to 3 years worth of construction being dropped in overnight is 12% decline in prices that only lasts a year, and that's kind of a normal, you know, functioning, all very normal functioning of the private housing market, then our focus for those people who are left out in the cold and unable to access housing should probably not be on the supply side, but really we ought to focus our attention on the inequality problem. Because, you know, markets don't allocate housing on the basis of need. They allocate housing on the basis of, you know, purchasing power. So, you know, if I'm in a position as an income earner to rent a bigger place, then I'm going to do that. But that doesn't necessarily help somebody who is struggling to be able to afford rents in the private market.
Now, Emily, we're just about 2 minutes away from the end of the program. It would be great to get you back onto the program at a future stage, because we really just started to get into all of the issues, and I've got lots of questions I'd love to ask you. But I think you have demonstrated with what the questions you've answered so far that, you know, some of the issues where the housing, you know, just expanding housing supply isn't by itself the answer, really need public housing. But we have to wrap up the program so that the next program can take over from us. So thank you very much, Emily. And I know you haven't really fully got into all of the discussion yet, but that's really as far as we can go on the show today without trimming the next program that's about to come on.
Well, if your listeners are interested in any of the issues and some of the research that we've done, they can download all of those reports at prosper.org.au. That one's the Pandemic Rental Dynamics Report. There's a bunch of stuff on supply and housing and planning deregulation and affordability. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much, Emily.